Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by Clean Cut Meals. I'm really excited to bring Clean Cut Meals on as a sponsor of the podcast because I know there's a lot of you listening that have such busy lifestyles and can struggle to prioritize the time to cook nutritious and tasty food. And Clean Cut Meals were the meal prep service I used for the lead up to Marathon de Sable, the 250-kilometer self-sufficient run through the Sahara Desert last month. And a lot of you following my journey on Instagram would have seen them tagged in Instagram stories. So I wanted to bring them on as a sponsor of the podcast because they provided me with so much value, even so much since I've got back because of all my speaking appearances and the different business ventures that I'm in at the minute. I've been struggling myself to prioritize cooking meals, so I've been using them since I've got back because if you're looking to just stay on track and you want the time saved from shopping, prepping, cooking your meals, I just can't recommend them enough. Their food is awesome. I love the taste. They'll fit it to whatever your goals are. So you can check out their website, www.cleancutmeals.ie. You can check the foods on there. You can make your order. And if you have any questions, you can send the guys an email at info@cleancutmeals.ie. So definitely go check them out, www.cleancutmeals.ie. If you're looking for a meal prep service, this is the one I use and I cannot recommend them enough. So I hope you enjoy today's episode brought to you by Clean Cut Meals.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is a Q&A. So again, I've pulled these ones from Instagram mainly, and there's a couple from the website, briankeenefitness.com. You can check out, we've done a lot of work on the website recently. So the new blog is all up there in the blog section. All the podcasts are on there as well with the timestamps and the show notes. And the contact part also has an option to send on questions for the podcast. So I know some of you have been sending in questions on that. So I hope you get a lot of value from today's episode. A lot of different topics we're covering. A little bit of a random one today. So I hope it helps massively. So first question, I was wondering, could I get your opinion and thoughts on people doing Ramadan that are not Muslim, people doing it for self-discipline purposes? So I'm going to answer this one very, very shortly and very quickly, and then I'm going to expand on my thoughts on self-discipline and the benefit that it can play. Personally, I have no opinion on people doing Ramadan, which is, again, my knowledge isn't super high on the Islam religion, but as from what I know, Ramadan is a period of fasting where you don't eat during day and then you just eat at nighttime. I personally don't have any strong opinion on that, but what I do have a strong opinion on is people choosing to do things to improve their own self-discipline. And if you've listened to the podcast in the past and it's not your first time, you regularly hear me say that how you do anything is how you do everything. And one of the reasons that I love fitness so much, another reason that I love business so much, is there's so many transferable skills. In terms of what you learn with one, it tends to cross over. And one of the reasons that I enjoy playing sports so much most of my life, one of the reasons that I enjoy bodybuilding when I was in it, one of the reasons that I enjoy setting up my own business and working through those initial trials and tribulations at the start, was because there's a lot of self-discipline required to persevere and push through in it. Because, you know, as an athlete, you're tired in the evening after work and you don't want to go football training. As a bodybuilder, you don't want to get up at 5 a.m. to do morning cardio. You know, as a business person, you don't want to sit down and convert files into a PDF. There's things that you don't want to necessarily do, but cultivating self-discipline makes it easier and then makes everything else in the rest of your life easier. So one of the reasons I signed up to Marathon de Sable, for, again, those of you who are longtime listeners, you know the 250-kilometer race self-sufficient through the Sahara Desert, was because I knew that I was going to have to become a stronger version of me to even get through that and complete it. And I was going to have to cultivate certain self-discipline and nearly challenge suffering to become a stronger version of me. And Vincent van Gogh has a famous quote that the comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing ever grows there. And that's kind of how self-discipline is. So I think cultivating self-discipline in whatever way that looks like for you is an amazing thing to do, because it will show up in all different areas of your life. And again, it's so relative. Getting up half an hour earlier is cultivating self-discipline for somebody. Making sure that you've prepared and pre-packaged your foods so that you don't reach for the biscuit tin or chocolates at lunchtime is cultivating self-discipline. The only thing that I would offer and I would have people watch out for is there's a big difference between willpower and discipline, because they're not the same thing. Willpower has been shown from studies over and over again. Kelly McGonigal has a great book, The Willpower Instinct, that talks about the science behind willpower and that it runs out. The more willpower you have to use throughout the day, it means that you're less likely to be able to say no to something in the evening. So if you've had a really stressful day, and again, I've lived this myself, when you've had a really stressful day and people have been chewing you out all day or been on your back or on your case, that chocolate bar or ice cream or biscuit or whatever it is a lot harder to say no to, because it's going to give you that like instant gratification straight away, and your willpower is lower because you've been trying to tell somebody not to fuck off all day. And that can, again, isn't the same as self-discipline. Self-discipline is building in systems, in my opinion, and building in routines that are helping you achieve whatever your end goal is. So in terms of whether you do that with Ramadan, just to test your body, or whether you do restricted time eating where you're self-restricting your food and using time-restricted eating patterns so that you only eat for, you know, 10 hours during the day or 12 hours during the day, or whatever goal you set to improve your self-discipline, it's relative. You know, for some people, it's going for a walk after work. For other people, it's practicing a little bit of mindfulness or being more present with their kids. Self-discipline comes in lots of different forms. The only thing I would offer is when you do it in one area of your life, it tends to show up in others. So for example, I know a lot of you are following my Instagram at the minute, and I put up a lot of my life in my Instagram stories. And one of the things I've experimented with for the last couple of months is getting up at 4:30 a.m. in the morning. Now I was always, particularly since I've moved my business to the next level and I was training for Maraz and Sabla, and I've got my daughter Holly who's 2 years old, and I've got a lot of other prior commitments that I try and focus on and give as much energy to as I can. One of the experiments that I wanted to do was getting up a little bit earlier. Now, for the last 2 years, I've got up at 5 or 6 a.m. It's what I've done because it's that time in the day when there's not a lot of distraction. There's not that many other people up. And it allows me to record podcasts. It allows me to write, anything book related or anything blog related, anything business related or work related I can do first thing in the morning. It allows me to take full control of my day. So one of the experiments I had was getting up a half an hour earlier than even normal. So I've started getting up at 4:30, and it's funny because on top of I am getting more done, because what's happening now is I have a 45-minute window before I train in the morning where I go through emails and I go through DMs on Instagram. So I've been very, very good at getting through those recently because I have a time factored into my day when I'm like, well, this is the time that I clear DMs. This is the time that I clear emails. And it takes a lot of stress off for later on in the day. But one of the other benefits that I found, which has nearly been a secondary benefit, is the self-discipline that it is cultivating and the psychological edge that it gives. And when I get up at 4:30 in the morning and I've got most of my important tasks done by 9 a.m., I found personally, I have a very, very strong psychological edge, and the things that used to bother me don't bother me as much. Now, again, I can't speak as a causative or correlated that I'm not stressed out because I've got my most important task done and everything else isn't as important. I don't know, is it that I feel better and I psychologically feel better because I've got that time to play with my daughter or bring my mum for lunch or go for coffee and I'm not stressed out and I need to get my other tasks done? Or if it's the fact that I don't want to get out of bed at fucking 4:30, but I'm still pulling myself out and I'm cultivating that self-discipline. So personally, I think structuring in something that challenges you, again, you don't have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. You don't even have to get up at 5 or 6 a.m. It may not be a get up early in the morning, but doing something that allows you to say that, right, I'm going to stick to this nutritional plan for the next 4 to 8 weeks, or I'm going to stick to this training program for the next 6 to 8 weeks, or I'm going to listen to 15 or 20 minutes of a podcast or an audiobook every day, something that's going to support me with becoming a stronger version of myself. Whatever that is, I think that can support you and manifest itself and show up in different ways. Again, how you do anything is how you do everything. So that's my own personal experience on it. I don't have any strong opinion on Ramadan and as such, but I think anybody listening that is stressing out or worried or anxious about certain things in your life, when you cultivate self-discipline and you make yourself a stronger version of you mentally, it shows up in so many other ways. So personally, I'm a fan, and I hope just sharing my own experience on what I found personally is relevant and lands and will help you figure out a couple of things that may improve your own self-discipline. Again, experiment with it. It may not be getting up earlier, but it might be getting up 15 minutes earlier and listening to an audiobook or meditating or doing a 15-minute HIIT workout. That may be your way of cultivating self-discipline. But find what works for you, and then the things that are working, double down on them. And the things that aren't working with them, they're experiments that haven't shown up and haven't lasted, then cut them and then keep going back and experimenting with other things. And again, repeat the process. Double down on what works, cut what doesn't. Next one. What's your opinion on taking zinc as a supplement? I think, like every supplement, it's very hard to give a one-size-fits-all answer, because if you're not deficient in zinc, it's just an extra waste. It's just a waste of money. The same as every supplement on the planet. If you're not deficient and you don't need it, your body's not going to process it. So best case scenario, you just piss it out. Worst case scenario, just damage to a vital organ. So what I would advise is, if your body is deficient in zinc, and I'm going to get into some of the benefits of having it, some of the signs of deficiency, and then you can decide if zinc is a supplement for you. But even though I'm going to use zinc as the example, regardless of the amino acid, regardless of the supplement, regardless of the mineral or vitamin, the same process is true. If you're deficient, it's 100% worth considering supplementing it back in if you can't get it from your diet. But if you're not, it's just going to make it, you know, expensive pee, or it can potentially do damage. Things like vitamin C in really high doses in the supplement form and iron are really, really toxic for the body. But if you're deficient, they can stop you getting sick. So that's just an example to keep an eye out for. With zinc, one of the reasons I like it so much as a supplement is, when you are an athlete or you're training in the gym or you're someone that has a lot of physical output, so you might be working a labor or a physically intensive job, you are more than likely going to be deficient in zinc. Now again, it's dietary dependent. If you eat a lot of red meat or you take a lot of pumpkin seeds, it's unlikely you're going to be deficient in zinc because it's naturally occurring in those foods. But if you are working out a lot or training a lot, zinc is one of the first minerals that gets depleted from your body. Glutamine is the amino acid equivalent. So one of the reasons that people that train a lot tend to supplement with glutamine is because it gets deficient as an amino acid in your body. And when it's deficient, again, there's all these other benefits it has, releasing natural growth hormone, help circulate or pushing carbohydrate into the cells. It's got loads of other benefits. But the main one that I've always found is that it keeps your immune system strong so you don't get sick. Zinc is very similar. It's the mineral equivalent. And it's very similar in the sense that it gets depleted in athletes that are training hard. So it normally does one of two things. If you are deficient in zinc, you're going to be getting sick all the time. So when you have constant colds and flus and your nose is running all the time, you're feeling tired and run down, it's a good chance your body's deficient in zinc. And you can experiment with it, because if you are getting a cold or a flu or runny nose every 2 weeks, and then you add in a good quality zinc supplement, and you get better and you don't get sick anymore, you were 100% probably deficient in zinc, assuming that you didn't change anything else. The other reason I really like it, for both genders, but particularly for guys, is zinc is a precursor for testosterone. So testosterone is your main male sex hormone. It's the one that gives you your libido, improves your muscle mass, makes you just feel better and healthier in general. When it's not in, you know, exogenous levels, of course, when you're not putting it in exogenously to hyper natural levels. And for women, it's similar because you need testosterone as well. It's just that the balance to estrogen and the ratio is going to be different to that of a guy or to a healthy guy. So one of the reasons I like zinc so much is it's a precursor, which means that your body uses the zinc to help make more testosterone. So if you're deficient, you may have things like low sex drive, you're not recovering that well from workouts, and you may not be falling that deep into sleep. So you're waking up in the morning and you're not feeling recovered. One of the reasons that ZMA is such a popular supplement before bed is the zinc helps drop you into a deeper sleep. And ZMA is a supplement, it's just zinc, magnesium, and vitamin B6. And the reason it's so potent is because if you're deficient in zinc, which like a lot of athletes are, it's why they find so much benefit when they use it. It helps drop you into a deeper sleep. And when you drop into deeper REM sleep, your rapid eye movement sleep, the better recovery you're going to have. Not only that, but you get all the cognitive benefits as well, consolidating memories better, your retention is going to be better the following day, lots of other beautiful cognitive enhancements that you get from dropping into deep REM sleep. But from a muscular recovery, there's nothing that beats a good night's sleep of dropping into high quality REM sleep for overall muscular and central nervous system recovery. And zinc can help that. It's why it's such a popular supplement before bed. Again, magnesium works in different ways. For those of you who read The Fitness Mindset, in the supplement section of my book, zinc and magnesium are two of the sleep supplements in the sleep section for different reasons. Zinc for that deficiency as a precursor for testosterone to help you get into a deeper sleep. Magnesium for a different reason. Magnesium helps wind down your central nervous system. And a lot of people are modern with the way food is right now, the way soil is right now, even most people are going to be deficient in magnesium. So if you're anxious and edgy for no reason, it may be worth looking into some of the effects of magnesium deficiency on the body. Also, if you use sugar or eat a lot of sugar, for every molecule of sugar you consume, it pulls magnesium out of your body. So it's worth considering, particularly around cheat meals or if you're doing flexible dieting, look into magnesium as well, just so that you're not missing out on the natural calming of your central nervous system. So it calms and relaxes some of that anxiety. But before bed, that can be crucial, just winding you down. It's why it's such a popular supplement. And then it's added in with vitamin B6 for a ZMA supplement. So that's kind of my opinion on it. Again, like every supplement, I love it for the people that are efficient in it. And for the people that aren't, it's just expensive. And again, it's not, as a supplement goes, it's not that overly expensive, because any vitamin and minerals you shouldn't be breaking the bank on, but you just don't need it if you're not deficient in it. But I'm personally a big fan of it. I take it normally during the winter, or if I end up having a lot of training sessions. I was using it temporarily with the Marathon des Sables prep, particularly when it was syncing up with my normal training routine. So I was training for 2.5 hours, 3 hours a day with runs in combination with weight training in the lead up to the flying out to Morocco. So I was using zinc then, and I also use it in the winter just to keep my immune system strong. So I'm a fan, but again, if you're deficient, look into it. If you're not, you probably don't need it. Next question. So what's next for you after finishing Marathon des Sables? So this came in a lot on my Instagram, and I'm still getting it on Instagram lives. So I wanted to kind of answer it in the podcast and keep it nice and short. But Marathon des Sables was, again, one of the best things I've ever done in my life. If you haven't checked out that podcast episode I did on my experience of running 6 back-to-back marathons with an ultra marathon in the middle, self-sufficient through the Sahara, definitely go check that episode out. It's becoming one of my most downloaded episodes. And again, I know anyone that's interested in my mindset side of things, it's a very, very heavy angle of the mindset. And I took it from that angle, because the truth is you can train your body to run through the desert, but your mind is a whole different kettle of fish. And I took it from that angle. So for me right now, the next thing on the list is an Ironman, is to build up to doing an Ironman, which is as far as I know off the top of my head, a 4 kilometer open water swim, which I need to work on because I haven't swam in 12 years and I've never swam open water, 185 kilometers on the bike, and then finishing with a marathon. So that's the next physical thing that I'm planning on doing. But in terms of focus, some of you have been listening to the podcast, following my social media, and you've seen that a lot of the stuff I'm doing with people now working through my business mastermind and a couple of people that I'll be working with on mentorships, building their business. So my focus has kind of shifted into that realm, just because of the amount of time I had to give to the Marathon de Sable prep. And the systems I've built with my GA players now and my BKF online program and how well that's working and the amount of people that are doing incredibly coming through that. The next avenue that I'm focusing on is those people that are with me now in the mastermind and people that I'll be working on in my business mentorships and working with me directly on building their personal training business or building their online business or combining that. So that's kind of where my focus is going. So between that and the Ironman, that's probably next. But again, purely because the Marathon de Sable and those of you that listened to that episode, it consumed so much of my thoughts in the lead up to it because there were so many things that could have gone wrong. You know, I was fucking dreaming about snakes and having nightmares about snakes and scorpions and, you know, didn't even dream of the sandstorms and things like that that could potentially, you know, really give you problems with life and surviving in general. So that took a lot of my thought in the lead up to it. So I've been able to switch it back now towards things that are more important, spending time with my closest people in my inner circle, working with the people on my mentorships and masterminds and working directly on their businesses, and then starting to build in my swimming so that I can build up to an Ironman. Will be again next year, South Africa more than likely, and that will be the next thing after Marathon de Sable. Next question. I've got a holiday in 8 weeks. I can't get motivated to get in shape for it. Any tips to get motivated? So there's normally a couple of reasons people struggle with motivation. I've spoken about that in the past in other podcast episodes. So you can just Google Brian Key Fitness Podcast Motivation and it'll bring them up. But in terms of getting ready for a holiday in 8 weeks, one of the things that people struggle with is not having an end goal or an end target. When you have a holiday in 8 weeks, you have that. Another thing people struggle with is when they're doing work and they're in the gym or they're running or they're eating what they think is good food and they're still not getting results. That can be very, very frustrating. We're all like that. If you're consistently doing things that you think is right and not seeing the results and you don't have somebody over there that's like, trust the process and you will break through, it's very easy to fall off track and quit. And again, and everybody is like that. In this case, it sounds like you just kind of need a bit of a kind of kick up the ass to go. What I would probably do in this case is I would get someone that's going to keep you accountable, because sometimes when you have the end date that you're working towards in 8 weeks and you have a program and a plan and a general idea of what to train and how to eat and you just can't really get the get up and go, having an accountability partner can be massive. And again, sometimes this comes in the form of an online coach. Sometimes this comes in the form of a one-to-one trainer. Sometimes this just comes in the form of a gym buddy that you're going to train with regularly. But I would get yourself somebody that's going to keep you accountable so that you're able to, that you have somebody that you have to check in with that you can't let down. One of the reasons that working with trainers, online coaches or one-to-one trainers or going to classes that you've signed up to, one of the reasons they work so well is because you're kind of accountable to that trainer. And we're all like that. You know, I've got people I'm accountable to with my business that I have to show them my reports every quarter. I've got, because it allows me to stay on track. When I was training with Marathon de Sable, I had people I had to check in with to make sure I was hitting my weekly runs. Marcus and Tom over in Dubai. And that can allow you stay on track, particularly when it's something you're not motivated for and something that you don't really want to do because you know you're letting someone down if you don't do it. So what I would advise is if you're really struggling and presuming that you know what to do training-wise and you know what to do nutritionally and you already have the end goal of a holiday in 8 weeks, I would advise getting someone that's going to keep you accountable, either a one-to-one trainer, either an online program or working with a coach online, or just a friend that you know is going to give you a kick up the ass if you need it. That can be the thing that separates you. Again, check out the other episodes I did on motivation for people, because motivation shows up and lack of motivation shows up in so many different ways. And again, normally I'm a big believer in progress is addictive and your lack of motivation comes from not seeing progress. But in this case, it sounds like you just need a bit of a kick from somebody to get going. So hopefully that helps. I think accountability in all areas of life is very, very important, whether it's to yourself or to somebody else. But sometimes you need to get it externally from somebody else, because that's the thing that keeps us on track. I know the people I work with, as I spoke earlier, people coming through my mastermind, people I'm working with in mentorships, the fact that they have me staying on top of them allows them to hit weekly targets, allows them to hit monthly targets, and fitness is the exact same. The people that come through programs, they're checking in each week and they're hitting targets that they're working towards. So it may be a case of doing that with somebody, maybe a case of just doing that with a friend that's good with the gym and you know will consistently text you or message you and say, come on, we got to get going. So that's what I would advise in this case, and hopefully it helps for your holiday in 8 weeks. Next question. I'm a mom to a 10-month girl. I was heavily involved in fitness before I got pregnant, but since I've had her, I feel like I don't deserve to train again, as if guilt starts to kick in. Is it a maternal thing? I desperately want to train and not to have the guilt hanging over me. I find it helps me escape from the world. So I wanted to touch on this one just because this is something that I slightly experienced myself when my daughter was born, particularly for probably the first 9 or 10 months. And it's something that shows up massively with women particularly. It guys get it too, to some degree, but it's really, really a maternal thing. Firstly, understanding the evolutionary biology, that's a really common thing that happens from an evolutionary standpoint. It's something that has been shown time and time again in scientific studies about the risk aversion that comes with mothers after they've had their firstborn and after they have children. So you'll regularly hear that, you know, a person or a mum that was, you know, would go up on, you know, a skydive or a bungee jump or whatever it was, some things that are like pretty risky if you do like an actual probability analysis, and they go completely risk averse when they have kids. They're like, well, I used to do that when I was younger, but I'd never do it now. That's an evolutionary evolved thing, because the females that evolved that characteristic and trait were the ones that were more likely to continually pass on their genes. And again, you're just a byproduct of evolutionary species of people that have been able to pass on their gene. And in, you know, thousands of years of evolution, you're just working off those traits. So understanding that that's hardwired in your DNA, that you're going to feel that way, that risk aversion to everything. And it also manifests itself in the separation anxiety, that you feel the guilt if you're not around your newborn or your, this can happen for normally for the first 2 years of life. Any of the studies I've ever read, it normally gets better from kind of toddler age on when there's less fear. And anxiety and less separation anxiety when you're away from your newborn, which is still effectively 18 months down, you still kind of constitute newborn. And understanding that when you don't look after yourself, you tend to not be the strongest mom or the strongest person you can be. And the analogy I like to give is, there's a reason when you're on an airplane, and if they say if the airplane goes down, you put on your own oxygen mask first, and then you give the oxygen mask to your child. That's the same way life is. The reason for that is because you can't help somebody else if you don't help yourself first. Fitness is the exact same thing. And understanding that there's nothing wrong with you for feeling that way, it's hardwired in your DNA, it's evolutionary biology just showing up in its most frequent form, and that separation anxiety you get when you're away from your newborn and you feel like you don't deserve to have, you know, the time to train or that hour to yourself or whatever it is, that's all really, really normal and really, really common. And I've had a lot of females that have came through my program around this time, normally between that 5-month mark and that 18-month mark, this shows up. And because you're coming back normally, your hormones are coming back normally, you're starting to get biologically back to your base point before you had, you know, again, depending on breastfeeding, you're starting to come back to your own base point before you were pregnant. So it's normally now it starts to show up and tends to really peak around that 10, 11, 12 month mark. When you don't look after yourself, all these other things can show up in terms of negative feelings towards yourself, that guilt towards yourself, and then you're in this negative spiral of, oh, I really need to train, I know it's good for me, I feel way better when I do, but I can't leave my newborn, and you get all this self-talk that ends up leading you to doing nothing, and you're in the same circumstance. Definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And in this case, you can kind of have that self-talk where you're like, I don't deserve to train, I've got a newborn, the guilt kicks in if I do. you need to reframe that entire thought process as this hour of the day that I train is going to make me a better mom, and I'm going to be more present when I'm there. I'm going to feel less stressed. I'm going to have less worry. I'm going to be less anxious, and I'm going to be a way better mom because I took that hour out of the day to train. That's a reframe. So what I would advise, and again, just from what I've experienced working with people, what I've experienced in my own personal life, you need to change the way you see it. They say when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change, because the circumstances aren't going to change. The separation anxiety would still slightly be there. I had it myself when Holly was born. I remember the first time I went to the US when she was about 10 or 11 months old, I felt this really, really weird sense of separation anxiety. I'd never felt it before, and it wasn't until I started to research it I realized what it was, and realized it was really, really common amongst young parents and new parents, and it's 10x'd for females. It's way, way stronger in terms of the emotional response. It tends to be way stronger with females because of the maternal instinct that you're biologically innate, that's biologically innate in your, again, your body in general. So what I would advise is start changing the way you see it. Start realizing that you don't need to feel guilty about training and taking that hour, that you do deserve to have that hour. And as a result, it's going to make you a better mom. It's going to make you feel better. It's going to make you less stressed. And you're going to just feel better in general about everything in your life when you get that hour, because you know that you were heavily involved in fitness before you got pregnant, and it was something that made you feel better about yourself, and it made you feel better with your energy levels in life. It made you feel better just in general. So I would advise changing the way you see it and start training again. You may not even need the hour. The truth is, you might be able to do a 20-minute HIIT workout, something really intense and active that just gets your heart rate up, that just tears some fibers down. That may be all you need. And then you build up on it. As your child gets older and as your little girl gets older, you can increase it. You can go from 20 minutes to 25 minutes and then 25 minutes to 30 minutes. You know, every month she gets older, add 5 minutes onto your workout until you're back up to an hour. Lots of different things you can do here, but just realize that what you're doing now probably isn't going to support you long term, and it's the equivalent of trying to put your child's mask on an airplane when you haven't put your own mask on first. You can't be the strongest version of you or the strongest or best mom you can be if you're not looking after yourself first. You have to look after yourself, and then everyone else around you will be better. And you will have people, just to finish on this because it's going to take it outside of this realm of this question slightly, you'll have people that will either tell you that you need to look after your family first, or you need to look after your mom first, or look after your dad first, or look after your children first. I'm going to tell you from my experience and my opinion, that's not necessarily right. Because if you don't look after yourself, you can't be the best version of you and show up the way you need to show up for those people. You need to look after yourself first. You need to do the things that make you a better version of you. In this case, training, and you need to look after yourself. You need to have all those other things, of course, and show up and be the best person you can be for your kids. But if you're not doing it for yourself, you're also not giving them the example of look after yourself, because if you don't, nobody else in this world will. And you gotta nearly be the change you wanna see. So be that person. Start looking after yourself as the primary person in this world, because if you don't do it, you're not going to show up in the way you need to show up for the loved ones that are around you. So that's just a little bit of a side note for anybody that's, you know, not necessarily a new mom. You got to take care of yourself first. I can speak from personal experience that I'm a better son, I'm a better father, I'm a better friend because I take care of myself first. I look after my health, I look after my energies, I make sure that that's all working, because it allows me to show up as a better dad, it allows me to show up as a better son, it allows me to become a better version of me and support the people around me, because you're looking after yourself as number one. And again, some people will say that's selfish. It's something that's served and supports me, so I'm going to share it on the podcast in the hope that it helps you. And in this situation with your 10-month girl, I hope that the message lands and that you realize that you need to look after yourself, and as a result you'll be a better mom because of it. Okay, next question. The blog today was exceptional, Brian, so I've actually linked that blog in the show notes. That was the 5 questions to ask yourself if you struggle with how you look. So I wrote a blog, it went up, this question came in on that day, but just some points to look at if you're struggling with the way you look, either self-image or body image or whatever it is. Just a couple of points there to check out, that it's something I came through myself where there was a time when I wasn't very happy with the reflection I saw in the mirror and had to come out the other side as a result. So there's just a couple of points. I'll link that in the show notes on the website, briankeenfitness.com, but this came in off the back of it. So blog was exceptional today, Brian. Just have a quick question. Maybe it's silly, but how do you keep yourself on track every day mentally? Do you have things every day that you do yourself to keep you at peace or pushing forward? Or is it all about your frame of mind rather than routines? So I love this question because there's a couple of things that really support me. I'm going to deconstruct my day slightly to kind of give you an idea of what supports me. And again, I'm very aware that sometimes when I share the things that I have found very, very successful for me, other people take them on board, experiment with them, and then double down when they do work. So in terms of keeping on track every day mentally, there's certain things that I base my day around that are non-negotiables for me because they're exactly how I want my perfect day to lay out. And one of the things that I do that's top of mind at the minute, when I sit down with people that are coming through my mastermind and people I'm working with in mentorships, one of the first things I do with them is I say, what do you want your perfect day to look like or your perfect work day to look like? And that question alone can set you up for everything that you want to manifest itself in the physical world. So in that sense, my perfect day, particularly during the week, my perfect work day looks like getting up early, doing creative work, which is a podcast or a blog or writing for a book. Then it's training. Then it's spending time with my mom or my daughter or my inner circle. And then it's doing reactive work where I'm building and doing something that's moving my business forward. And then I've got my social media time where I'm doing my Q&As and lives, the stuff that I love doing. That's kind of how my perfect day looks. And if you don't know what that looks like, it's never going to manifest itself into reality. So the first question I would ask that sets me up and keeps me on track every day is I come back to that pretty regularly. I keep asking myself, well, is this my perfect day? And then what does my perfect day look like? And am I doing this consistently? If I'm not, I change things up. I experiment with it. I'll experiment with getting up at different times. I'll experiment with different training techniques. I'll experiment with different things. But the general basis of that day where there's some period of physical training in there, there's some period of creative work that is completely unobstructed from the outside world. So podcast-based, writing a book, writing a blog post, something that's completely creative that I've created from nothing, some reactive work that moves my business forward in some way, shape, or form. So some form of collaboration or some form of correspondence on email, something that's social media based that allows me to chat to people and just help and provide instant feedback that can support people moving forward in their journey. And then surrounding myself with a period of the day that is with my inner circle or my daughter or my mom or the people that are closest to me in this world. That's how my perfect day looks. How it gets moved around varies day to day, and the time commitment varies day to day depending on time of the year, depending on prior commitments. But that's how my perfect day effectively looks like. And then I just constantly try and reverse engineer that. That was just an idea in my mind about 18 months ago. And now it's manifested itself into reality. It's one of the reasons that I sit my mastermind people and mentorship people down with that. Because if you don't know what you're trying to achieve, you can't hit a target you can't see. So the first thing that I do that keeps me on track every day mentally is coming back to that and consistently asking, am I living my perfect day? When the answer is no, when I've fallen off track for a couple of days, I'm able to rein it back and pull it back. So that's something that I do consistently. Another thing that really helps me is, and this is more so to keep me at peace and pushing forward, is finding the things in my day that allow me to switch off and disconnect. So I've got a couple of weird things that help me, and I've got a couple of traditional things you may have heard elsewhere that help me. One is training, that like some form of physical exercise nearly every day, not so much at weekends because I'm doing other tasks and I'm moving around, I'm pretty active anyway, but in terms of physical training, so running, cycling, gym, swimming, something along those lines, I build that into my routine every single day during the week because that allows me to keep my anxiety levels down. It allows me to keep my stress down. It allows me to just feel better in general because of the endorphin release you get from training. So that's something that I've built in. Some people have meditation, some people do yoga, and that's something I'll experiment. I've played with, it's something that hasn't quite stuck in terms of an experimentation. But for me, training is the non-negotiable thing that's in there. As long as I'm fit and well, I'll do something. If I'm traveling, I'll do a 20-minute HIIT workout in my bedroom. You know, I will do some variation. I've got those workouts in my BKF online program. I literally just take those home workouts and I plug them in when I'm on the road. When I'm at home, I do it in the gym, or I live out in the country now, so I'll go for a cycle or I'll go for a run. But that allows me to stay on track mindset-wise and means that I don't fall off in terms of my mental health, which is something that, for those of you who've read the mindset section of my book, is something that I struggle with because of my own issues with anxiety and my own issues with constantly thinking about things that could go wrong, and consistently trying to pull myself back into the present moment and realize that, you know, the past is something you can't change and the future is a movie that you don't even have the script for yet. And that training allows to pull me back into the present. It's my equivalent of meditation. That time is one of the reasons that I don't train with people and I don't enjoy training with people, is because that hour in the day is my meditative state. It's that time when I have my music in and I'm just training and focusing on the body parts that I'm trying to hit, or I'm focusing on hitting the intensity level that I'm trying to hit. And that allows me to get all the disconnect from the world, that transient hypofrontality, that switch off of your prefrontal cortex, that part of the brain that's constantly overthinking. When I'm consistently focusing on squeezing my quad muscle, or I'm trying to get my heart rate up to a certain level, that part of my brain just completely shuts down. It's what shuts down when people with meditation. It's why people tend to be so much calmer after meditating, or so much calmer after a workout, if you get that same hit that I get. So I do that every day because it's something that allows me to stay at peace. The other things that tend to work and experiment that I've experimented with is I have a digital detox where I completely switch off from social media and the internet. I started with one full day at weekends, and now it's nearly into 2 days. Some weekends I can't commit to digitally detoxing. When I say digital detox, I mean I don't have my phone with me at all. I actually have an iPod that I use. It's got my audiobooks and podcasts downloaded to it, but you can't reach me. You can't text me. You can't email me. You can't Facebook me. I'm not even on it. That started with one day a week, and at times I'll try and do it with 2 days a week, but realistically, it never really happens 2 days a week because of prior commitments and other things that I need to respond to. But at least one day a week, I'll do a full digital detox. It's normally Sunday, and it's normally from Saturday night until Sunday night, where the phone goes away and I'm not even near it. That digital detox allows me to nearly recharge. And what it does is, because large portions and large sections of my business are online, and social media is one of my primary marketing strategies, and it's also the thing that allows me to connect with as many people and help as many people as I can. So it's got so many serving qualities. But when you're on it consistently and you're constantly reacting to different things that are coming in and different stimulus, and then seeing different posts where you start comparing yourself with other people, that can really drain your emotional battery. So having that digital detox does one of two things. One, it raises up my inner battery, my inner peace battery, and I feel so much more recharged after. But two, it means that I'm dying to get back on it again Monday morning, and then I'm able to fly through DMs, I'm able to fly through different videos I'm making, I'm able to get through all those things with enthusiasm because I've taken that disconnecting step back. It's kind of like the equivalent to if you train 7 days a week and you're doing that all the time, and you take that rest day or two rest days, you're itching to get back into the gym on Monday. And that's kind of how I feel with social media. When I take that digital detox, I'm ready to get back to people, and it's one of the reasons I've been consistently able to put out as much content as I put out. It's one of the reasons I've been consistently able to do as many Q&As as I do, because I get that recharge every weekend nearly, and it allows me to be really, really excited about getting back on it first thing during the week and helping as many people as I can. So I do think that works quite well for a lot of people. Some variation of it. You may not be able to commit to a whole day. And I really struggled in the beginning because of I would get phantom phone texts, which I've spoke about in the podcast in the past, where you phantomly in your pocket feel like your phone is vibrating or you feel like you have a message, or you get that addictive Jekyll and Hyde where you're scrolling through Instagram and you've been on it for 10 minutes and you don't even remember taking the phone out of your pocket. Like, it's the equivalent to the Jekyll and Hyde where, you know, Dr. Jekyll and then you'd have Dr. Hyde would take, or Dr. Hyde, you'd have Jekyll take over. I can't remember the equivalent, where it was like, whoa, what happened there? And you lose 10 minutes, you lose half an hour. That was happening to me with Instagram, where I would be 10, 15 minutes into scrolling on Instagram or Facebook, when it was at the time, it was Facebook or Snapchat, and I don't even remember taking the phone out of my pocket. So that's when I realized that I was starting to form a nearly a bit of an unhealthy addiction with it. So I, again, as I said earlier with the self-discipline, I factored in a full day digital detox. Now, it took me about 2 months before I had it down because I really, really struggled to do the full day. If I could go back, and the advice I'd offer is I would start with a couple of hours and then start adding an hour onto it. You know, it's the old adage, how do you eat an elephant? Bite by bite. And I would advise taking 2 hours off in the evening and then scaling back an hour until you're a full day. That's probably a better piece of advice that if I could go back, I would do it that way now. But that's something that has really helped serve me. One of the experiments that I'm working on now is, because I've been getting up at 4:30, as I spoke about earlier, which is an experiment I think is going to stick for another couple of months anyway, until I see how my body's responding. But another one that I've been trialing simultaneously in sync with this is getting off social media at 8 p.m. or 7 p.m. or even probably scaling it back to 6 p.m. where once I've got all my DMs replied to or videos done or whatever it is, my phone is going to go into a locked box until the following morning. That's something I'm going to experiment with because of that, again, self-discipline, because it's hard to give up your phone. Like, I love it. There's some really funny studies done that would blow your mind when people were given options to give up chocolate or give up sex or give up their food, their phone for, I think it was a month period. The disproportionate amount of people that was giving up chocolate and sex above their phone was unbelievable. I can't remember what the percentage was, but I think it was in the high 70s or 80s. And when you think and actually step back and go, which one would I give up? Would I give up sex? Would I give up chocolate? Or would I give up my phone? The fact that you even have to think about it shows the kind of unhealthy obsession we may have with it. Now, again, your phone is amazing. Social media is incredible. Podcast app, audiobooks apps, they're amazing. But they're a brilliant slave, not a master. So just make sure that you're not a slave to them and that you're in full control of them. But that's something that allows me to stay on track every day. And then in terms of the frame of mind rather than routines, I speak a lot on routines. And one of the reasons I ask a lot of my guests about their morning routines is I'm kind of obsessed with deconstructing what makes other people successful and then learning what, again, success leaves clues, and then modeling them or taking or experimenting with their routines and their systems and seeing what works and then doubling down on it. One of the reasons I make this podcast, and anytime I ever use myself as an example, because you're your own best example, is that it resonates and lands and people go, oh, I didn't think about it that way, or I might try that system, or I might try that routine, or I might try that supplement, or I might try that training strategy, and whatever sticks, double down on it and see if it works. If it doesn't, cut it. And one of the things that helps me is playing around and experimenting with different routines that other people have, modeling successful behavior from other people. Success leaves clues. You want to be a millionaire, do what millionaires do. You want to be a fitness model or have a fitness model physique, do what fitness models do. You want to be a successful speaker, or you want to write a book, or you want to get a high paying job in a corporation. Find the people that have done that. Find the things that are consistent across the different characteristics and traits and personality examples of people that have done it, and then you copy them, then you model them. You put your own spin on it, but success leaves clues. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. That's why it's so simple to get in shape. Not easy, but it's simple. You want to get in shape and get your body fat down, do what everybody on the planet has done to successfully get their body fat down and keep it down over time. They've eaten good quality foods, they've got into a calorie deficit, they've done a good training program, and they've increased their cardio. The systems are there, everything is there. You just have to apply it and adapt it to you and then make it work. Because you can do all those things, but you may not be able to stick to it long term if you don't include foods that you enjoy. You may not be able to stick to it long term if you don't do a training program that you enjoy and systems and exercises that work for your body around your energy or around your injuries or around your biomechanics. That's the thing that separates people. So it's using the routines, using the systems that are already out there, using the things that make other people successful or whatever success is for you that you want to be like or you want to model or you want to copy, and then putting your own tweak on it. So for me, it's not so much a frame of mind, even though I'm a strong believer in, you know, everything that you think and everything that you tell yourself normally manifests itself in the physical world. But it's a case of just taking the best ideas from other people and realizing that your systems that you have in your life and what you do every day is what's going to determine where you go. And generally, I love the, I can't remember who the quote is attributed to, but the thought philosophy that if you tell me your habits and you tell me what you do every day, I'll tell you where you'll be in 10 years. And that's so important and it's so true. So I would just offer that you audit what you do every day, because if your goals of what you're trying to achieve in your life, whether that's in business, whether that's a relationship, whether that's in your physical fitness, whether that's just in your health in general, if your actions aren't mapping to the end goal, you can't complain when you don't hit there. So you need to make sure what you're doing and the life you're living and the systems that you have in place and what you do every day is somewhat moving you forward. One of the reasons I love Marathon de Sable so much and the 250 kilometers to the Sahara was there was times, particularly on the long day, which was the 86 kilometer, which took me just under 24 hours. There was times when you were like, the finish line was so fucking far away, but you just put one foot in front of the other. And it didn't matter how slow you went. It didn't matter if you were running full tilt at sprint or whether you were crawling. You were moving towards the finish line. You were moving in the right direction. So it doesn't matter how slowly you go. You just put one foot figuratively or literally in front of the other and you move forward. And you make sure that your ladder is up against the right wall. You make sure that you're climbing the ladder against the right wall. And you make sure that you're pointing your internal compass in the right direction. And then you put those steps in front of one another. That's how you do it. It's the analogy I like. It's like building a wall. You don't build a wall and set out and go, I'm going to build the biggest, best wall in the whole world. You start by laying a brick as perfectly as you can lay a brick, and then you put the next one on top of it, and then you put the next one on top of it. That's doing the right things every day. You don't get to a 6 or 7 figure business by doing the one right thing that hits. You don't get a six pack or a leaner physique that you're confident walking down any room by doing one workout or eating one meal. You don't get an amazing relationship with your life partner who you feel is your soulmate because you met them and went out on one date. You do the right things every single day and you do them consistently and you make sure that you're pointing your compass in the right direction and you're moving in the right direction. The reason I loved Marathon de Sable was it was the physical equivalent of that. There was days, that long day, I was fucking crawling that last 20 kilometers on the 86 kilometer day, the last 3 or 4 hours on that 24 hours. But I was moving closer to the finish line every single time. So what I would offer and what I would advise, whatever it is that you want in your life, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a physical fitness or the body that you want, whether it's a new job or a business that you want to start, you put one foot in front of the other, you make sure you're pointing in the right direction, and you move forward. You surround yourself with the people that can help you get there. You surround yourself with the information that can support you, but nobody can walk those steps but you. You have to do it, but you can't hit a target you can't see. So the reason I've been able to, and I'll use myself because your own best example, and again, so success is subjective, and what success means for you may not be what it means for me. Success for me is never having to worry about paying bills. It's being able to spend time with my daughter. It's being able to spend time with my mom. It's being able to live life on my terms and be around the people that I want to work with. It's being around the people that I want to spend time with. That's what success means for me. It may be different for you, but find what success means for you. Surround yourself with the right people and then do the right things every single day. And hopefully that helps answer your question in terms of what I do. And again, success leaves clues, and I'm not saying I'm the version of success that is for you, but I'm my own version of success. And again, there may be things that resonate and land there, is why I share them. So hopefully that helps. So find what it means for you, and then hopefully some of that lands in the sense that not being just a frame of mind and thinking a certain way, that it's a combination of a lot of things, and hopefully that supports you on your journey. So that's the end of today's podcast. Be sure to check out my blog on briankeenfitness.com. If you are someone that enjoys reading, if you enjoyed my book, The Fitness Mindset, be sure to check out my blog on the website, briankeenfitness.com. I'm putting up a lot more writing content on there, so hopefully it's supporting you as well. And if you enjoy reading, definitely go check that out at the end of this episode. You can check out my Facebook and Instagram as well. It's also Brian Keen Fitness. And I'll catch you all next week.